Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a sustainability presentation from November 2016. Mr. Stefan Posner, Senior Researcher, Sveria IVF presents Phase Out of PFAS on the International Regulatory Agenda.
I start, or you say something? Okay, Stefan Posner is my name, and I'm actually coming from Sweden, and I'll try to, I cannot speak German, but. So, I will present to you the regulatory situation globally and on European level on PFAS. And why am I, will I talk about that? My role is I'm a drafter for the PFOS, and I'm working with the PFOA regulation in the Stockholm Convention, and I'm very much involved in the regulatory work on PFAS, on highly fluorinated chemicals in the European Union. I'm actually do preparatory legal text to REACH and to the POPs legislation to support the European Union. I will give you some perspective of what's going on here, and I will focus on shorter chain PFAS and silicones, and you will see the story. Just to give you, I got a comment from one colleague, it's very chemical, so I will try to keep it a bit less chemical. If you don't follow it, please shout. The fluorochemistry, we have two categories. We have surfactants and we have polymers. The surfactants are very effective, the fluorinated surfactants. They are the most effective surfactants we know. They make water wetter. That's strange. Water gets more wet. Very effective. And we have these polymers that are used to for DVR, durable water repellents. And you can also repel oil and fat substances. And we have also the fluoropolymers, but this is a completely different chemistry, the polymers, these fluoropolymers. PTFE, you know, for non-stick in frying pans and this, but I will not talk so much about them. So this is a nice picture, isn't it? When you see these DVR-treated fabrics, and you look very close to the surface, you see this? No, you don't. You won't see this. But actually, the protective for liquids look like this. You have these vertical chains, and you have your textile fabric. To the fluorochemistry, you have alternatives. You have silicones, and you have hydrocarbons that are not based on fluorochemistry. And I will talk about these, a bit about these, and a very little about these. You follow me? Okay. The terminology of the PFAS is disastrous. I'm working on a governmental report for Sweden, exported to Brussels to make the PFAS terminology more regulatory friendly. This is very, very difficult to follow, even for a chemist. It's like winning on Lotto every week, if you understand that. But to give you an idea about this, there are all these abbreviations, and these you will find when you read whatever you read on PFAS, these per and polyfluorinated substances, you will see these abbreviations. And that's one reason it's very hard to follow this documentation. And I promised the hosts that this will be kept here. Where they post it, I don't know. But there are ways to try to understand this and follow it. It's really tricky to understand this. But anyway, this is how it looks like today. And this is even worse. This is a simplified scheme of one of the processes that produce these nice different surfactants and polymers. I will not go into detail. You will kill me for that. This is called the ECF process. And when we talk about, this is nice, short chain and long chain, you see this starting chemical here. If this little N here has less than six carbons here, it's called a short chain. If there are more than six carbons here, it's called a long chain. And this has really nothing to do with science. This is marketing. We go to the next process, telomerization. They are too competitive. They have nothing to do with each other. And you see that if I take the next slide here, you see the starting material and the N. If the N here is shorter than seven fluorinated carbons, we call it a short chain. And if this is longer, we call it a long chain. Now you have the background. And if all this chemistry is terminated, it's transformed in environment, you will get these acids. You are familiar with PFOA, yes? And we go backwards, and you're familiar with PFOS. These are the terminal, they are not used, really, with one exception. This is used to produce fluoropolymers. Fluoropolymers, you remember, they were not in the scope of the DVR. So, how is the regulatory agenda? We have these PFOS and related substances. We have the PFOA, the so-called long chain, and we have higher homologs, means that we have chemicals that have a longer perfluorinated chain than PFOA. PFOA has eight carbons, and there are chemicals cousins to this one that have longer chains. And we have a shorter, but I come back to them. And these are under regulation, under restrictions. PFOS is a global ban, and PFOA is under review for a global ban in the Stockholm Convention. And in the European Union, we have ongoing activity to regulate. These are already regulated. There is an ongoing, probably presented in January this next year, a regulation on PFOA for the European Union. And higher homologs to PFOA, I mean longer chains than the eight, is ongoing for regulation in the European Union. But we have other chemicals. We have this terrible thing here. It's called perfluorohexanoic sulfonic acid. And this chemical is not a short chain. You remember the previous slide for this chemistry? This has six carbons, and it's called a long chain. It's as bad as this one. And there is no legislation, actually, for this chemistry. But in China, they say this is a short chain, and we have some discussion there. They produce quite a lot when this was banned globally. And we have the shorter chain. They are under review in the Stockholm Convention and in the European Union, and that's why I put a yellow mark here. So, what is this all about? The short chain has been presented as feasible alternatives to the long chain, since they were considered as had a very low toxicity and a very low environmental impact. So, what is the Stockholm Convention doing? Have you heard about the Stockholm Convention? It's the United Nations have an environmental program called UNEP, and within UNEP we have three conventions. We have the Stockholm Convention, the Basel Convention, and the Rotterdam Convention. I am very much involved in the secretariat work of the Stockholm Convention. It's a global action on persistent organic pollutants, POPs. So this is a phase-out of really hazardous chemicals. They are very persistent, very bioaccumulating, and very toxic. And we have the Basel Convention that deals with POP-containing waste. And we have the Rotterdam Convention that deals with trade of hazardous chemicals, or POPs. And these are joined together in one secretariat, so we work very close together. And the result from this legally binding activity is to get legal measures to reduce and eliminate production, use, unintentional production. Maybe you heard about these environmental dioxins or things like that, byproducts that actually are POPs, prevent them to be formed and to stop this kind of production where unintentional, not produced by man directly for use, but indirectly as emissions and stockpiles and ways to reduce that, especially in developing countries. The decisions in the stock conventions are legally binding for 179 countries in the world, where the European Union is one player. And the very important activities for the convention is to implement those listings on POPs so it transforms to national legislation to phase out these chemicals. Information exchange, this is very important for developing countries so they can do a monitoring program and switch over to less toxic, less hazardous chemicals in their own countries. Public information is really important, education, to make a better understanding among the public. How is the current situation? For instance, customers, if you want to change your behavior, the most effective is education and public information. Research, development and monitoring, these are articles in the convention, paragraphs. We need alternatives, feasible technically and environmental alternatives to phase out these POPs. That's why research is very important. And of course, we have to talk to the surrounding society what we are doing. And these are the statutes in the convention. What is an alternative in the convention? The first point, it should not be a POP. That would be very bad. That happened actually, but it should not be a POP. And beside that, because very few substances are POPs, it should not raise serious concern on health and environment. Health is all these carcinogenic, hormone disturbing, you see here a number of very bad long-time effects, what we call repeated dose effects, should not be in a part of the intrinsic properties of an alternative. It should represent equivalent use of a POP, or even better. That means that you can really replace it in reality with the same functionality as the POP. Means for PFOA, for instance, this chemistry, that the alternative should work as good as the PFOA-related chemistry. It doesn't mean that you put more chemistry into the system, and it doesn't mean that the durability is worse. It means that you have equivalent durability, equivalent aging properties, equivalent technical performance, and consumption of this chemistry. And economy, of course. So the convention has a responsibility to stimulate innovation. There is funding in the system by the World Bank and by something we call GEF. I just know the abbreviation, but it's a funding developing countries, and any country can apply for money to stimulate innovation and development of their own industry. And quite a lot of money. And of course, as always, we are talking about legal documents, social and economic assessments have always to be done. So we don't go from ashes to fire. So it's quite a long process to decide, is this a real candidate? And unfortunately, the short chain are not in that position. And all data on these assessments are based on publicly available and independent scientific data. We try to separate between policy and scientific data. This is really hard. So, I will give you some examples of conclusions on short chain chemicals that are being now not considered as feasible alternatives to the long chain. And this is in a legally adopted report I wrote in July, and it was adopted in Rome in September, and the final legal binding for this document will be in May in Geneva. We start with this substance, the perfluorinated hexaonic acid. It's the terminal degradation product of the so-called C6 chemistry. And information we received on this chemical is that it has a toxicology that is quite, where there is a concern. It has potential endocrine toxicity. It means it may disrupt the development of over generations, hormone disturbing. And one of the most worrying observations with this chemical is that it reduces the impact of vaccines. There are major studies where vaccines were non-effective on small children, so they were as they were, had not got the vaccine. Simple diseases could be caused, and there are quite substantial studies now on the what we call the pharmacokinetics on this chemistry. They bind on proteins, and they might block the formation of antibodies. Environment, they are the increasing levels in the environment, and they're very hard to remove from the environment. They're harder to remove than the long chain. And there have been observations now in rural areas, so we think that this is a long-range transport chemical. We are not sure about how it's enriched in the environment, because this is a very different behavior from other chemistries, but it has some sort of bioaccumulation. I would not call it, it's a bit tricky, this term. So this is definitely not an alternative in the Stockholm Convention. If we go to, this was the terminal end product of this whole chemistry, the C6 chemistry. If you go to one of the industrial used chemicals in this chemistry, the C6, we have this fluorotelomer sulfonate, and it degrades in the environment. It's formed from this chemical under quite, I would not say normal, but under environmental existing conditions. There are emissions, and the major concern is that it's transformed eventually to this acid. It takes some time, and all these acids are extremely persistent. They don't degrade. We have no idea about the further degradation products. Monitoring data, there are observations in the Arctic of this substance, which is a concern that it's not possibly not an alternative to the long chain. The long chain is already out, but it's not qualified as an alternative, and it's very much used for, I think it's metal plating it's used. And it's a challenge to find other chemistries. We have the alcohols. These are the major precursors to the C6 chemistry. We looked into the C6 and we looked into the C4. This alcohol is the parent precursor to the sidechain fluorinated polymers for the durable water and oil treatment. And the C4, this is, I'm not sure about the technical feasibility there, but the C6 is absolutely used as a precursor. And there is some estrogenic properties observed, quite worrying. And it showed also cytotoxicity. This is a pre-step. Maybe it could develop cancer. Degradation in the environment, this will sooner or later be transformed into the hexaonic acid, which I showed you earlier. It takes time. We know the roads fairly well. But in this view, serious doubts that they will qualify in the convention as feasible alternatives. emissions, we have, they are transported through particles in the atmosphere, very volatile chemicals, and transformed to the acids in the atmosphere. And they have been found in a bit worrying concentrations in indoor environment and under atmospheric conditions. So it's a big question mark that this chemistry is really an alternative chemistry from a convention perspective. We have this C4 chemistry. This is a relative to the PFOS chemistry. That was the first chart I showed you. Possible neurotoxicity. It has been detected in water systems, indoor, in landfills, and in the Arctic. It's possibly a long-range transport. And in emissions to the environment, it's through chemical-driven oil production and where this chemistry is produced. So due to these observations in the Arctic and the possible neurotoxicity, it's not a feasible alternative from the convention perspective. What's left? No long chain, no short chain. And I tell you, before I go into the siloxanes, we are working, I'm involved in a work for Germany for a European restriction on the short chain chemistry. It started a couple of months ago. The intention is to implement this into the REACH regulation. It has been highlighted in the Stockholm Convention, and it will not be a POP, but it will definitely not be a recommendation that the short chain chemistry is an alternative. So we move to the other alternative group, siloxanes. They are used for water repellent chemistry. We looked into that 2 years ago in the convention. And this is the parent precursor of all silicon chemistry. And what's making the durable water repellent are the polysiloxanes. And our conclusions in the convention was that D4, this is the parent, the core chemical in the whole silicon chemistry. It is possibly a POP. So it's listed to be listed. It's a very persistent, very bioaccumulating, and toxic substance. And when we had this meeting in September this year in Rome with the convention, the silicon industry told me this: if the D4 is banned, we have no silicones anymore. They are wiped up from the face of the earth. Rubbers, oils, plastics, coatings, everything is gone. But there is a draft text for a possible listing of D4. And the chair in the group I'm working with said to the Global Silicon Council, "Be innovative," he said. And they were not very happy. 8 o'clock in the evening, they had this news. Total ban, no silicone industry. And our approach here was a conflict. And he said, "My dear colleague from Holland, be innovative. 8 o'clock in the evening. If they had a knife, they would use it." I was surprised. I didn't know this before. And so what's left? We have this, the paraffins and the waxes, but they are not effective as the silicones to repel oil. So we have a challenge to manage the professional workwear, protective clothing. The fluorochemistry has to be live on somehow, but not in this way. This is for cotton and this kind of light wear, where you have this easy water repellent. And we didn't find so bad properties on this, but they have limits, these chemicals. There are a number of paraffins versions, but still. So, we came to conclusions in this work, this document that now it's a guidance document that is binding, that low surface tension is a key function. We need that. Physical stability, yes. And surface energy on solid items. But how can we reach that? This is the question. Substitutes to PFOS and PFOA are available. Global market shifted some years ago to shorter chain, but they are more or less out of the question in the convention. There are very high concerns about the hazards and environmental properties, and we need more data to do comprehensive risk assessments. This is the next step. And Germany and European Commission are very helpful in this work. This is the next step for me and for colleagues in Brussels, etc., to get more data. And we need improved information from the industry. There is a suggestion to enforce transparency from the chemical industry, to put legislation in force that forces the industry, chemical industry, to describe what they are doing. We're even talking about the system where they have to register the chemical product before it's put on the market. I tell you, me and my colleagues are quite fed up with this trade secret issues. I want to make a stop on that. We mean more publicly available, independent scientific data, and this industry has absolutely the capacity to do that. Need for incentives. There is a need to develop the safe, technically feasible alternatives, but without legislation, this will not happen. So my final advice to the member states, don't wait for legislation until you have perfect alternatives. Enforce, make national laws, and the industry will start producing alternatives. This is the way it goes. We have no situation, no example where they voluntarily started producing alternatives. There are two ways to do this, to restrict and to impose taxes on bad chemicals. Taxes that makes the bad chemicals non-profitable. And these tools are presented and discussed in detail. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabrics Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to performancedays.com. Copyright November 2016 by Designer Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.